Good evening. It is, almost 7 p.m. in Seattle, Washington on February the 18th, 2019. And this is your, I don't know what you'd call me. This is the madman of Little Saigon, the insane hermit, because I have to be honest with myself, if not with the world. I am a bit of a hermit at times, and when I have this feeling that the world has become a little bit too jagged, I think I become even more of a hermit, which kind of works against me. You know, it's one of those things, if you want to keep working as a software engineer in the Seattle area, and you're not a magical blue badge or a permanent employee at Amazon or Google, then you have to be prepared to move from one contract to the next. I may be on the fringe of that instability, but that instability exists for many of us contractors. And given my last experience, which was kind of terrible, and I didn't enjoy, and I have a lot of bad feelings about, yeah, it's been a little hard for me to get the traction back up. So, whatever you want to say, here I am. Today, or tonight's podcast, it's kind of based upon some stuff I've talked about before, about difficult times and how you perceive them. Before I go too far into that, I need to say a couple other things. I've had some people reach out to me from my SoundCloud account recently, and it's been mostly positive. With one or two exceptions, it's been generally positive. Now, if you've seen links on Zero Hedge, okay, I'll admit this, because I don't know how I can feel guilty if you actually go to the comments on Zero Hedge. Every other comment's going to be some type of spam, and there's always the person telling you that, you know, they quit their job and they make $90 an hour on the internet, and this is how pathetically, this is how much of a pathetic place I was in a few weeks ago. I actually clicked on one of those work from home links and gave them my email address and my phone number. It's one of the reasons why I changed my email address a week ago, because I was getting these emails every day. I would unsubscribe, and every time I unsubscribed, I would get more. These emails about schemes and ways in which I can make $90 an hour from home, figuring out ways to sell stuff to people that don't have money like me, which is what we're talking about, really. It's very absurd. It's like they basically are trying to convince you you can make tons of money from home, figuring out ways to market stuff on Amazon to people who don't have the money just like you. It's very, very strange and absurd. It's a farce. And yeah, so if you've seen my links on Zero Hedge and you say to yourself, Dan, you shouldn't do that. Well, I try not to do it too much, but I'll admit to it. And yeah, I've got some coffee too. This is good news. I saw a sibling this weekend. And in addition to this sibling helping me with rent this month, which I can't even begin to say from my perspective how significant that is, this particular sibling did not have to help. There's no requirement, but they did. And it's easy for me, given my darkness, that it's easy for me to think that everybody in my family pretty much is ashamed of me or thinks I'm a piece of shit. I sometimes feel these days the only purpose I serve within the Sullivan clan is as an example to all my nieces and nephews of what not to do. You know, maybe their parents can say to their kids at night, almost like some scary story, well, if you don't learn to put up with bullshit and accept all the crap, if you're not willing to just, you know, get along with the great grayness of the infinite whatever, you could end up like Uncle Dan, living in Little Saigon. That may be my purpose. That might be why I still exist as a cautionary tale. And in a previous podcast, I think I said, well, I might just be a special effect, like some body, you know, riddled with bullets in a Sam Peckinpah or Paul Verhoeven film. I mean, you never get to know that character, but you certainly get to enjoy watching it riddled with bullets. That might be my purpose too. But I'm not alone in this. A lot of us these days feel like special effects or things or objects that simply get ground to dust by the great wheel of history. It isn't particularly special to me. And so, yeah, I got to get over that too. I am thankful to my sibling, but we were talking about good times and tough times. And one of the things that's occurred to me as I've had these conversations, and it's sort of important to think about, is it just because a lot of people have the same experience, it does not imply that they draw the same conclusion. And this is sort of a tale of my dad and my uncle on my father's side. I won't use his first name because I know that part of my family would not want to be associated with me. They're a whole different class of people. And you know, I don't really see them that often. I don't hear from them that often, but they're very, you know, great people in a great part of the world doing great things in this amazing place we call the United States of America. And so I don't really want to, you know, besmirch their name, so I can't mention them. But my dad and his brother, my dad and his brother, you know, they both grew up during the Great Depression. They were kids during the Great Depression. And you would think that if they grew up in the same household and they both grew up during the Great Depression, that their solution, their perspective on what happened would be the same, but it really wasn't. My uncle ended up becoming a very disciplined person in his own private economics. He started businesses. He was a really successful entrepreneur. He was a restaurateur. He owned restaurants. And as a kid, we would go to his restaurants, and they were, I loved them. I mean, I thought they were great. You know, if you'd ever, a long, long time ago, and I mean a long time ago, like in the 1970s or something, went to a restaurant, I think it was called the Cranberry Tree or something, Cranberry, in Mount Vernon. But if you ever went to the Cranberry Tree or something like that, I think that was one of my uncle's restaurants. I think he also ran one called Sebastian's near Everett, or maybe it was closer to Edmonds. But yeah, he was a very successful entrepreneur, very disciplined. He didn't waste a lot of money. And to the extent that it was still possible during that day and age to become reasonably wealthy, he became reasonably wealthy. And God bless him, because he did the things that you should do. There's nothing wrong with him doing those things. And, you know, to the extent that he had been in his life a generous person, on at least one occasion, he was extremely generous to me when I was in college. So I can't possibly criticize the guy. Then there's my dad. And my dad, you know, had the same experiences. He saw the same things, the horror of the Great Depression. But in his case, it was like a different conclusion. It wasn't, you know, the world's coming to an end, so you better pinch your pennies and you better be careful. You better, you know, invest in the right things and whatnot. It was the world's coming to an end, so I'm going to live for the now. And before I go too far, and you say to yourself, well, Dan, are you making a moral judgment on one of these two perspectives? No, I'm not, actually. I had a really shitty relationship with my dad when he was still alive. He died when I was 23 years old, and I always had this feeling when I was younger, deep down inside, that maybe one day in the future, we would figure out our way through our bullshit, that maybe he would see me for somebody that wasn't a piece of crap, And I would see him as somebody that wasn't just an angry man. But he died when I was 23, and so that never happened. We never got a chance to sort of shake hands or hug. One of the best summers of my life, and when I say best summers, it was right after I finished at the University of Washington, and I was doing a job on a ship in the Gulf of Alaska. And it wasn't a job you needed a college degree for. It was a really basic job. But if you've ever been to the Gulf of Alaska, especially in the summertime, it can be quite an experience. And it was an amazing experience. And it was that autumn following that summer that my father died. Anywho, I don't want to talk more about death. The point is, my father and I did not get along, and there were so many years, especially when I was married, where somehow, as a fear, as a boogeyman in my unconscious, I always said, well, what if I end up like my dad? And to the extent that my ex-wife could reassure me, she'd never met him, but I told her stories, she would say, well, you won't end up like that. But I got to admit something to myself. I kind of admitted this weekend. I think I ended up almost exactly like my dad. I mean, the big difference is, my marriage completely failed and I never had a kid. He had eight kids. So there was that gravitational pull that I was missing. But, that gravitational pull didn't necessarily domesticate my father completely. So I don't really know if it would have domesticated me. But if I complain about my father being angry and angry at the world at times, I have to admit to myself, I'm angry at the world at times. If I'm upset with my father, about him being a little bit obsessive compulsive, in my own way, I got some terrible OCD. If I get upset with my father about him keeping grudges, well, you know what? I learn from the best. I hold on to all kinds of grudges. If I want to get upset with my dad, or not so much upset, but if I want to sort of find it curious about how reckless he was at times, not always in a bad way, I guess, although if you're a father, being reckless probably is mostly not so great. I'm kind of a reckless person, Even though I'm a hermit, when I do get outside my cave, I often do reckless things. I'm not going to say that's good or bad. You can have your own fucked up opinion about things. That's your own fucking business, man. But my father grew up during the Great Depression, and I'm fairly certain the conclusion he came to is that, you know what? Life is short. The world is coming to an end. Or at least that's how it felt when he was a kid. And he also served in World War II, so you put those things together. And so I think his conclusion was, life is short, the world's coming to an end, live for the now. My uncle was, life is short, the world's coming to an end, you better save your pennies. Both of these perspectives are radically different from each other. One is about the notion that you can conserve reality, that you can conserve stability, that you can fight against the laws of thermodynamics and entropy, and you can win. And to the extent that life itself is kind of a never-ending battle against entropy, there's some truth to that. I mean, I don't think people should give up. And I wouldn't claim that my dad, gave up. I mean, he had kids, so you have to at least have some faith in the future to have a kid, let alone eight. But my dad's perspective was, you don't probably know what the future's going to be. It could be tomorrow that everything falls apart. And then you're going to say to yourself, boy, wouldn't it have been nice now that my money's worthless, now that that the world itself is sort of turning to shit, wouldn't it have been nice if I'd taken some of that money I'd invested in Boeing or Bank of America or in the three or four homes and actually bought a boat? And went boating, or went out drinking, or smoked some weed, like in my case. So if I'm looking at this correctly, I very much ended up like my dad. I ended up obsessive and angry, unable to forgive in many cases. And then even when I'm in a good place, kind of with a reckless, you know, devil may care, whatever attitude. It's not that I do things to hurt other people. And, you know, we all do end up hurting people in this life. And I've certainly discussed those instances where I think I have. It's not about harming other people, but there is this kind of self-harm aspect to it. It's like you want to walk very close to the edge of the cliff, and you want to be able to get right to the edge, but you don't necessarily want to jump off. If you listen to my podcast, you know that in the last couple weeks, I have been staring down the problem of homelessness because I was not sure I'd be able to pay rent. Now, as stated, I got some help, and God bless my sibling for helping me. This person didn't need to, didn't have to. And I'm not even sure it was a wise investment. You know, only history will tell that story. But in the process of trying to find a way out, I did something that as an anarchist, wow. As an anarchist, I struggle with, because even though I could rationalize it and say, well, I paid taxes for so many years, which means the government's stolen my money for so many years, maybe I can find a way to get a little bit of that back. And so I went to DSHS to see if I could get help with rent. And they said no, but then they said, would you like a food stamp card? And it's like, I didn't even think long enough to say no. I've been going to the food bank for a couple months now, and there might be quote-unquote good food banks. I really don't know. There are these nicer neighborhoods in Seattle where probably the food banks are nicer. But here's the thing about all these food banks. They check your zip code. So it's almost like, it's not like they're going to, I don't know, you can lie to them. But it's like basically the nice people get the nice food bank and the really poor people get the poor food bank. And you can say to yourself, well, that's just justice. And maybe it is, maybe it is. But the food bank I go to, it's not so great. But every once in a while, you get some surprises. Like every once in a while, you'll get a dozen eggs. And you might say to yourself, well, why would a dozen eggs be so miraculous, Dan? Because if you haven't had eggs in a few months, a dozen eggs seems like a miracle. A dozen eggs seems like a meal that fills you up and gives you a few vitamins. I mean, a couple times I've been to the food bank and they'd had these giant bags of corn puffs that clearly, without question, are not organic and probably contain about as much glyphosate from the process of raising them as is legally allowed in this country. And given that all sorts of crime is committed under the color of law, yeah, some of the food you get at the food bank, you know, from the Department of Agriculture might be a little bit toxic. But I got smart about it. You know, I focused on the elbow noodles. I focused on the rice when they have it. If they got a dozen eggs, that's a good day. I've been taking their apples, but their apples, the ones they get, seem to get oversprayed. All I can describe is oversprayed with insecticide, pesticides, because the smells I smell remind me of my nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare training from the Army, and I'm not exaggerating. Like, they actually, it's almost like those old-style sniff books. They give you these cards, or at least they did back in the day, so you could identify something like phosgene, or identify something that, you know, might potentially be sarin gas. But what I was tasting and smelling on these apples tasted like this excessive layer of pesticide. And what's worse is I actually ended up eating them, because really, if you're in a dark place and you're considering something very extreme, then why would you fucking give a shit other than taste? Why would you give a fuck about eating apples that have been overdosed, overcovered with pesticides? It's just, there's no fucking logic to it, other than taste. But yeah, so I got myself the EBT card, and it had $120 on it. And yeah, I could have been way smarter about how I used it this first month because I'm going to get a couple more months of it. I wasn't very smart. Actually, holy fuck, I hadn't had Coca-Cola in a couple months, really. So I decided to just get some garbage food. I hadn't had any garbage food. Like, for the most part, at least at the food bank, the food itself may not be great, but they don't really hand out things like Coca-Cola or candy bars. And I think that makes sense. I mean, I ended up going to the store and buying some Snickers bars and some Coca-Cola and some Doritos. And it's terrible. It's terrible because it's such a cliche. It's like, you know, the conservatives will say, well, Jesus, those welfare queens, they're just going and they're getting filet mignon and chocolate cake. In my case, it was more like going to get some, you know, candy bars and Coca-Cola. Totally not appropriate, but I don't know. It's what I got in common with Dad. I mean, I am old enough now that I have no business having any Coca-Cola with sugar in it at all. And if I do, it should be small amounts, maybe once or twice a month. I'm old enough now that I probably shouldn't consume any extra sugar. But let's be blunt, sugar is a kind of drug. And if you're in a shitty place, you know, thinking about a lot of shitty things, it is a kind of way of escaping from that. It's not the same as weed or alcohol or things worse than that. But it is a way of escaping for a moment from whatever you're feeling, getting that sugar rush. So yeah. There are those two perspectives about the world when it comes to stability and the future. I wrote a novella, not technically a novel because I think it was around 20,000 words, but I wrote a novella slash short story a number of years ago called Retirement. And it's kind of semi-autobiographical and, you know, full disclosure, as a writer, some of my stuff, my initial stuff, has had a little bit too much biography in it, and I think that's all over, but it's something that was sort of stuck in my craw. So as a writer, some of that just sort of came out. And yeah, so Retirement, you can think of the main character in the story of Retirement, which, you know, it's on it's on Kindle. And it's a free PDF download from my website. If you go to dfgtc.org and click on the link that says, mysteriously enough, words. But if you click on the link that says words from my website, there is a PDF, if you search the page, that says Retirement. And it's kind of about me, except for really, really exaggerated. And one of the things about the main character is the main character doesn't actually believe in things like Social Security. The main character does not believe in things like an IRA or a 401k, that any of that bullshit's going to be there for you. The main character believes things that I kind of believe, but I do think my dad definitely believed that he would never get a retirement. And in case of my dad, he never did. He was working up in the woods, you know, as a logger until a week before he died. And then he died, and then he was gone. So if there was a retirement for some people, it never existed for him. And as far as my uncle goes, and I don't want to go too far into this, my uncle, and this isn't an uncommon story these days, but I'm going to mention it because it's good to think about these things. It's good to raise awareness. My uncle suffers from dementia. And so even in his case, his retirement's been a bit of a false horizon, a bit of a deception. I mean, he worked his butt off his whole life. He did everything right in terms of the quote-unquote American work ethic slash investing ethic slash entrepreneurial ethic. He did all those things right, and now he's dying slowly of essentially Alzheimer's or dementia, whatever you want to call it, whatever the current name is. So in the story Retirement, the main character just doesn't believe there is such a thing. So for him, retirement, because he's a software engineer contractor, and like me, he sometimes has gaps between contracts, he thinks of those gaps as retirement. That's his retirement. That's what he's going to get. He's going to get whatever number of gaps there's going to be, whether it's a month here, a few weeks there, maybe a few more months here and there and elsewhere, where he has just enough money for beer and weed and pizza and the internet, and that's it. And that's as much as he fucking cares about that character. And because it's an exaggeration, it isn't totally me. I do care about more than just, hedonistic desires being fulfilled while waiting to go program another fucking computer. But like I said, it's semi-autobiographical, and there's a lot about me in that story. I am very much like my dad, as stated. I don't believe there's going to be a magical retirement time. I don't believe I'm going to turn 68 and then spend 30 years hella skiing. I know there are people who believe this, and it's possible that if you made enough money and you found yourself a chunk of land someplace that you can put up a fence with concertina wire, because separate topic, side note, if you're gonna, buy anything for your prepper's basement, I highly recommend picking up a few rolls of concertina wire. It doesn't take up a lot of space. Make sure you buy the gloves, because what makes concertina wire so cool is also why you do not want to handle it without the gloves. But if you're one of these people who has the money to get your little place someplace in Montana or New Zealand or somewhere in, the Ozarks or Texas, or maybe in Argentina with some libertarians in Chile or Paraguay, who the fuck knows? If you're one of those folks and you have your concertina wire around your property, God bless you. I'm not a communist. I'm not going to tell you you're a scumbag because you had the money and the common sense to buy yourself a little bit of a safe zone so you could retire. But for most of us, retirement's going to be a bloody hell and it's never going to happen. So, yeah, am I a little bit reckless? That's probably true. Do I act a bit hedonistically? As stated, I don't have kids, and the only person I'm responsible for taking care of is me. And while it's the case, I try to be generous in my life, and I try to help people as much as I can when I can. I am not currently at a place where I can help much of anybody. And if I do start making money again, I probably will never go back to the place I was a few years ago. It doesn't mean that I've given up on generosity or concern for my fellow human being. I have not. I am a Christian. I will do what I can to help people if I have the resources. Currently, I don't. Currently, my resources amount to my ability to pray for others, and I do. But like last month, I spent a lot of time doing something I rarely ever do. I spent every day praying for myself, praying to the Lord in heaven to save me from a choice between going into the streets or hanging myself. And I'm not saying that to be dramatic. I don't actually want to die. But if you were to say, Dan, what would you prefer? To be a homeless person in Seattle or to be dead? Well, truly, that's a fucking hard choice. Because homeless people in Seattle are treated like shit. And every fucking problem of the collective psyche of Seattle is foisted upon them. As if the homeless people are the reason why we had a housing bubble, and the homeless people are the reason why the housing bubble will probably, and it may even be doing so right now, collapse. Let's blame the fucking homeless people. This place, Seattle, for whatever you want to say, I grew up in Washington State, so I feel like I have a right to say this. Whatever you want to say about Seattle, there is a darkness that's settled over this city, and it is disgusting. It isn't, people want to say, well, it's liberals or it's progressives. No. That's a shortcut to thinking. That's not actually what it is. It's evil. It's people who just don't give a shit about their fellow human being and then will come up with rationalizations as to why. It's why they're okay with flushing people down the toilet of existence. So between my uncle and my dad, especially given what happened to both of them, given that my dad died before he got to retire and my uncle is spending a portion of his retirement losing his mind, literally losing his mind. If you've never been around someone with Alzheimer's or dementia, it is quite terrible. You could argue it's as bad or worse than cancer, because if you have no mind to feel, you know, there is nothing there. There's no pain if there is no self. In a lot of ways, Alzheimer's and dementia is a very slow death, an extremely slow death in the most meaningful sense. Your mind and your soul slowly disengages from the body. And as a person who is of the faith and is a Christian, I can only imagine that the soul of my uncle is there, and the soul has to experience the fact that it cannot talk or communicate as it once did. It cannot feel as it once did. It cannot create the connections it once created. And when my uncle does die, and everyone does die eventually, his soul will be liberated, and I believe it'll go to heaven. But while this happens, it's torture. There's nothing you can say about that other than that it's torture. It might be the worst kind of torture, because it is the kind that steals your identity in the absolute sense. Who you are slowly withers away, and what's left is an empty cave. Where there was once a light, the light is slowly going out. So who was right, my uncle or my dad? Who was the smart one? The one that lived for the now, or the one that saved money? And the answer is probably not going to satisfy you. Because I might have felt like I knew the answer a few years ago, but right now, I don't know that I know the answer. I know that I have one sibling. Actually, I have a couple siblings, a few siblings still on Earth. You know, Nancy's in heaven, but there's a few on Earth. And I would say, for the most part, most of my siblings, and they're mostly parents, they kind of figured this out. It's probably not one or the other. It's not, you know, be uber good at saving all your money, and it's probably not spend all your money now because tomorrow's not going to be here. It is in between. You know, the sibling that helped me out this weekend, their family isn't super rich, but they do live a happy life. And they got into sailing. You know, I went sailing with them last October, right after the incident at Alaska Airlines I won't talk about. And I gotta say, despite the fact that I was a little jittery because I hadn't been sailing in a while, you know, they're pretty good at it. And the thing is, you can tell they enjoy it. So for a lot of you guys out there, guys and gals, human beings, dudes, whatever, I don't get into the gender pronoun bullshit, and I am not, you know, I've done a number of podcasts on free speech, so I would say see those podcasts and fuck you. If you have a problem with me saying man or woman, fuck you. But for all of you men and women out there, all you trans and gay, all you human beings, it's not either or. It probably has never been either or. It's not a case of let's live for the now because tomorrow shall never come. It's probably not a case of either let's bury all the gold in the ground because I gotta save it for tomorrow. It's something in between. And if you're a parent, and I'm not a parent, but if you do have kids, the message probably needs to be something along those lines as well. Yes, you should conserve for the future, but what you conserve eventually is going to have to be used. Otherwise, it was a waste. If you simply take the talents, and it's funny, talents in the Bible, I think, also meant money. But if you take the resources God gave you, that God gave all of us, and go off someplace and dig a hole and bury it in the hole, well, it's true, you're conserving those things. You're conserving the wealth. But for who? For what? On the other hand, if you make a bunch of money and go out drinking every night and, you know, do lots of cocaine and have lots of hookers and cars, you may not be conserving anything, and you simply will just blow up and disappear. The real answer to the riddle, who is right, my dad or my uncle, is yes. They were both right and they were both wrong. And I think to the extent that they lived a happy life, based upon pictures I've seen, I think they both tried to live a happy life. It's also true that I spent most of my adult life hating my dad. And it's also true that as a father, he often sucked a lot. And if I am like him, as much as I hoped I'd be a dad and probably never will be one, it's probably good I'm not. Because he kind of sucked at being a dad at times. I'm not saying he was the worst in the world, but for me personally, and I guess this is selfish, he kind of sucked. But I also have to admit this. I am almost exactly like him. And with respect to what do you save your money or do you spend it? I'm way more like my dad. And in my own defense, if my father was alive today and he looked around the world, he'd probably drink a beer and say, "Yep, I was right." My father, the guy that once water skied back in the 50s through Deception Pass. Now, if you don't know where Deception Pass is, and you don't know what it is, and you've never visited Whidbey Island, Deception Pass has a good name, probably not scary enough. It is a short opening between two larger bodies of water in the Puget Sound, so when the tide moves through it, it can look like the worst class 5 river you ever fucking saw. And even when the tide is slack, even when the water is relatively flat, and I'm using sarcastic quotes, there are whirlpools everywhere. So in the 1950s, choosing to water ski through Deception Pass is kind of like saying, I mean, what do you say about that? That's pretty risky behavior. That's kind of reckless. And that was my dad. I mean, I worked for him up in the woods. He was a logger. I set chokers. I hated it. I hated the whole fucking thing. Being in the army felt safer than being a fucking logger. Now, of course, I was never in combat. So I'm sure if I'd ever been in combat, I would have reassessed that belief and it would have been smart to do so. But the everyday army stuff, the training stuff, which sometimes can be dangerous, I guess. I mean, I suppose the most dangerous training I ever went on was going to airborne school. But even that is so controlled, I mean, one of the things you do at airborne school is you actually watch people pack chutes. And when you see these disciplined, young men and women, NCOs and specialists, packing chutes, you realize that, yeah, from a statistical perspective, given the mechanical nature of things, of military parachuting, given that you spend the whole first week basically climbing up stairs to go 3 feet up and learning how to jump 3 feet and fall, because, by the way, when you're falling in with a military parachute, I think you're going about 20 miles an hour. So if you do the Hollywood thing and you just kind of like land on your feet, you're going to bust both your knees. So yeah, airborne school, whatever risk might exist for airborne school, it's very controlled. It's the nature of the beast. So my dad was a logger, and logging, other than combat, I would argue that logging, especially back in the day, was an extremely dangerous occupation. I don't know that it's as dangerous today, but there aren't as many loggers today. And there's more technology and more safety. My dad hated safety. I mean, it's funny. One of the things as a cadet and as an officer in the military they would emphasize during training, especially, is safety. Like it was almost like an obsessive thing. And I don't think that was true of all military history. That's very much true of the modern army, the stress card army, call it that. But safety for my dad, he got pissed off when OSHA required that they start sewing chaps, these Kevlar chaps, into people's jeans so they don't cut their legs off with a chainsaw. And I once had a chainsaw buck on me, and buck means, sort of get out of control, and it cut through my, jeans and cut my knee. Thankfully, it was just a flesh wound, but if the chain had gone around two or three more times, if I had been a little bit more disciplined in sharpening the chainsaw, I could be walking with a limp today. So who was right? Yes, they were both kind of right and they were both kind of wrong. And that's the human condition. And in terms of the spectrum, yeah, I'm way more like my dad. I mean, I don't have a, I have a pot to piss in, but it was purchased by somebody else. You know, I have some stuff, but most of my stuff fits into a few bags at this point. And I'm not complaining. In some ways, I'm describing my life because I enjoy it this way. I enjoy being currently disconnected. The closest I came to being connected in my life was when I was married, and maybe that was always going to fail because I was never the person who could be that guy. That, 100%, guy, human, slave, dude who would never get pissed off at work, so he would never quit his job. He would never have issues with the government. He'd make sure he paid his taxes on time. Even before I accepted that I was an anarchist, I was never going to be that guy. It's not that I want to run around with dynamite in my hands and just, go up in a blaze of glory, a steaming pile of shit smoke storm. That's not it at all. It's just that in the last decade or so, especially, and maybe this is selfish on my part, maybe it's weakness, maybe it's cowardice, I have just had the sense that it's safer to not get too connected. But when I was married, that's the opposite. You're connected to another person. Anywho, this has been a bit of a ramble, and since I've covered this topic before, I don't really want to go much too much further. But yeah, when you're looking at the world today and you say to yourself, should I go, get the beer and have a cheeseburger, or should I save the money and buy some groceries and put the rest in the savings account? I cannot answer that question for you for any number of reasons, including which I'm not making any money right now. But what I can tell you is there might not be a right answer. You could easily go out tonight and say to yourself, I'm not going to have that steak and I'm not going to have that glass of wine. And then tomorrow, three or four nukes could explode 100 miles above the surface of the United States, knocking out all power for the next 2 years. And yeah, you might kick yourself in the butt a few months from now as you're eating a rat burger saying, I kind of wish I'd had the filet mignon. Okay? I'm just being blunt. If you're going to say to yourself, I'm saving it all for the future, then you better have a lot of fucking faith in the future. And keep in mind, that's a human future. And human beings are lovely. We're also great. We're way better than French bulldogs. But we're not perfect. And so if you put all your eggs in that basket, if you think that the future is this magical place where you're going to get there and Ray Kurzweil is going to say hello and hand you a glass of nanites that's going to make you 25 years old for 500 years, if you believe in that future, I'm not going to say God bless you because I think that's kind of satanic, but if you believe in that future, fine. Have faith in that technological future. I don't think that's what's coming. I really don't. I think that that's bullshit. And if it is what's coming, it isn't coming for you if you're like the rest of us and living paycheck to paycheck. If you believe that the rich and the powerful are going to build a magical wonderland of super technology and, 17-inch penises, and you're going to be able to live like a porn star, fucking virtual Ava Adams until the end of time, eating pizza and drinking beer and smoking weed. Fine. If you think you're going to have a magical retirement, fine. Okay? That's your belief system. But I don't believe that. That doesn't mean I don't think you should do things that are, conserving. I don't mean conservative. That's taken on a political tone in the last 100 or so years that doesn't really mean what people think it means. I mean to conserve, as in to preserve things for the future. If you want to do that, fine. If you want to live for the now, fine. But if you're going to do this, think about what, well, I would say think about what's most likely. Me personally, if I had the money, I'd buy a farm someplace and I would learn to farm a little. even if it was just potatoes and onions at first, and a few chickens. Believe me, a few chickens, a few potatoes, a few onions. Yeah, it's not a perfect life, but you can probably live like that for a while. You can have your eggs and your potatoes. And if you're smart enough to have an herb garden, which would really be brilliant because people do enjoy adding some spice to their foods, that's even more brilliant. But no matter what you do, unless you're God, you can't predict the future. You don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I could wake up in a week or two to a world where everything is just amazing. It's been publicized that Lockheed developed a fusion reactor that fits in your pocket and can power a dildo. Who the fuck knows? Technology tends to be extremely disruptive in the discontinuous sense because it'll arrive when you least expect it, and it will shake your world. And so, who knows? There could be a magical widget that changes everything. They could develop a metallic hydrogen superconductive cable system that allows us to pump free electricity around the world from solar panels, ringing the planet. Who the fuck knows? I don't know. But if I, but I'm a, but as a, if I were wagering, I would wager that's not going to happen. On the other hand, that doesn't mean you should blow all your money. It doesn't mean you should hop a plane to Vegas and take your retirement and go to the roulette table. I would say don't do that either. If I was trying to advise people, if you have the resources, either figure out a way to build authentic community. I don't mean Facebook. I don't mean Twitter. I don't mean Instagram. But build authentic community in the city where you live. Figure out a way to do things like urban gardening where you live. Figure out a way to deal with issues of water where you live. That's fucking fine. If you want to stay in the city, be smart about it. And that includes owning firearms because, sorry, but the cops don't always show up. And if things get really bad, there aren't going to be cops showing up, okay? But if you had the money, I'd also say it might be smart to move, 10, 20, 30 miles outside the city. And I don't mean to suburbia. I don't mean to a housing development. I mean buy, if you can afford it, buy 5 or 10 acres or, at least a few acres and figure out how to do a little bit of farming. And I don't mean with a lot of chemicals and, a John Deere tractor. I mean learn how to do it the old-fashioned way, which, yeah, is a lot more physical labor, but guess what? That's a bonus. You won't have to go to the gym. You can just go out to the garden. Anywho, this has been one of those podcasts that it's probably pretty ranty. And I did go and use my food stamp card to buy candy bars and a liter of Coca-Cola today and some Doritos. So my energy levels and my mental capacity reflect my diet for the day. So I should probably end this and say, I hope you have a great evening. For all you folks that listen, and especially the feedback, I really appreciate it. None of this is a substitute for authentic community, but it does feel better than when I was on Twitter. I do feel like the people that contact me are real people. I don't think you're Markov models. I don't think you're little robots wanting to pass the Turing test. I actually think you're real. So for all you real folks out there who have contacted me, thank you. And have a great evening. What's left of it.